Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio, right here in the center of Iowa, center of the United States, the center of it all. Community radio is a really good invention. Yes, it is. Oh, currently, the powers that be are installing a new sidewalk out in front of the KHOI studios, which is in a great, wonderful old building, a house. It looks like a big old house, just off of downtown. And, yes, the sidewalks are getting a little iffy. So, yeah. Well, we're glad they're fixing things up there. We don't want to get the bill, but there it is.
So, well, when you have an old house, you're always fixing something.
Always fixing. Yeah. Entropy. It hits the best of us. Yes, it does. Well, there was a beautiful farmer's market this weekend. Somehow, at the beginning of June, summer was kind to us. Started out beautifully. Farmer's market in downtown Ames was lovely this weekend. Lots of people, sunshine, lots of bakers. And
Oh boy.
Bring them on. And vegetables. And for all those people that have places in their garden and in their yards and wherever they put flowers, there was a whole lot of flowers, a lot of perennials for those that wanted to kind of spruce up their lives. Yes, a lot of good stuff.
Speaking of plants to start, how's your basil going?
Slow, but I've got basil.
Okay, I saved two spaces to put some lemon basil and Thai basil in.
I've got two little pots marked for Donna.
Oh boy. Yeah. I can always count on Lana.
it's amazing. The plants know what they're doing. You know, they kind of start out in the spring that, well, they're never going to amount to anything. But then summer hits. I think that's something to do with the day length. They also put day length. All of a sudden, the warm weather things are really picking up. Like my tomatoes, I thought, well, there they sit for a while. I mean, healthy, they were there, but all of a sudden, we're getting green and looking like tomatoes. So things are looking up. Oh, I want to mention about farmers market. Coming up June 8th in the Ames Downtown Farmers Market, there will be the annual Kids Bake Off, young folk baking. And Saturday, July 13th, there will be the annual salsa contest. And somehow people just line up for free samples, and you get to vote on People's Choice Awards. And I believe they have professional people actually tasting this stuff, too. I remember I was part of the Kids Bake Off judging committee one year, and boy it was lovely. Way too much stuff, way too much sugar, but I like bakery. It was good.
I hear there's somebody making croissants.
Yes, there was two young women at a booth called Tease Bakery, T-E-E, Tease Bakery. They made croissants.
Oh boy.
So, see,
I will be there next Saturday morning.
Oh, and another couple making some really nice varieties of bread and bagels.
Homemade bagels again?
In downtown Ames, can you believe this?
We haven't had homemade bagels around here for about 15 years.
Oh, well, there we go.
That's a treat worth going for.
Thanks to all the people that work so hard to put together things for a Saturday morning. It's really a fun thing, and remembering all of the hard work that goes into it all. Well, today in the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to talk about garlic and garage sales and a good brownie recipe. Ah, there we go. But with some stuff in between, too. So let's start out talking garlic, Donna.
Well, Lana is the garlic farmer supreme. I am blessed with a supply of garlic all year long from Joe and Lana. So, what is your anticipated harvest date this year? What do you think?
We always kind of look for garlic to be ready 4th of July. But all of a sudden my garlic patch is scaping, which means it's waking up and it's putting up flower stems, which are called scapes. And talk about something from another planet. The allium family, onions and garlic, do a lot of really creative things with their reproductive systems. Yes, you can plant garlic and onions from bulbs. They divide, and you can plant from the cloves. Or most allium family plants, which includes leeks and onions and garlic and ramps too.
And shallots.
Put up startling flowers. And scapes are one thing that garlic does this time of year.
You wouldn't necessarily think of it as a flower, but that's what it is, right?
Well, that's because I pick it early. The flower is inside this pointy thing. It's a long, snaky-looking thing. Believe it or not, this is where the flower comes out of.
So eventually it makes a seed?
Yes. If you leave the scape on the garlic, and it takes a while, but it will turn into something that looks like a powder puff, a big poofy thing.
It opens up.
And it goes poof. So think of a dandelion opening up, and there are seeds that come off there. Isn't it amazing? Every garlic clove that was planted I planted long about November 1st. Halloween-ish is when I put garlic cloves in the ground. They winter over underneath some nice straw mulch.
So you just plant an individual clove.
Mm-hmm.
With the sort of bottom down, right?
Yeah.
Pointed up.
Pointy side up, about thumb deep. And that's about all you need to do, although it really does appreciate having some mulch over it for the winter time. You wouldn't need to, but I do. I always put some straw over it, which, kind of helps it through the winter. And it starts showing up, April, depending, little green things start showing up.
So how many cloves did you plant last fall?
About 800.
Oh, she's an ambitious woman, let me tell you.
Now, see, I do get carried away, but I do love my garden. And, so far, my back and my body has not totally given up on me. So this old girl is going to keep gardening until she can't no more. So there.
Good. I guess you don't have to do yoga because you're so limber from planting.
Oh, yoga helps because, yeah.
So what varieties did we do this year?
Well, I just had two. Music, which is a large, white, hardneck variety. It's a German hardneck. German heart. I love that term. There's a bunch of different varieties, and music is one of them because why not? I could plant a variety called music. And there's another variety that I've sort of been playing around with, and I plant quite a bit of those. It's a little smaller than music. It's called Chesnock Red, and it's not really a red garlic, but it does have, by the time the papers grow around it, and by the time it's ready to harvest, the papers around the head are reddish. So yes,
that the one that has it's kind of almost like a little red stripes?
Yeah. Chesnock Red, and there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties. And once upon a time, I thought, oh, I'm going to try a bunch of different kinds. It all grows up to be garlic. So,
well, what's the difference between a hard neck and is there a soft neck?
No. A Chesnock Red is also, I plant both hard necks because they grow really well here in the middle in the Midwest, and because they grow over winter, they just suit me the best. I could be growing, if softnecks are a bit more suited for, according to my reading, are a bit more suited for warmer climates, like what's that place in California that has the garlic festival?
Oh, the Gilroy Garlic Festival.
There you go. Yeah. See, and the softnecks are the kind that you can braid. The tops come up.
Oh,
and it stays.
That's the difference. Okay.
Hint, soft neck.
Okay,
you can braid. This, the hard neck varieties, you have a hard time braiding them because there's a big stalk that comes up the middle.
Yeah, that's quite tough.
It's quite tough. It kind of is tough because it has to get through our winters here, yes. But anyway, I thought, I was surprised at how far along the garlic plants were this year, but there they are. They're actually starting to bulb out. We wanted to talk about green garlic. And
well,
there's
the culinary stages of garlic picking. So you plant it in the fall. It comes up in the spring. When it gets out of the ground a couple of feet, is the green garlic season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can pick it and kind of chop it up like a big scallion and cook with it like that. But if you leave it in the ground, it goes on to make a full head. So you don't want to pick it all while it's green because then you won't get your garlic heads. The next thing that comes are the scapes, which are the little flower tails that grow on top, and they're kind of curly. And two things about the scapes. The smaller they are when you pick them and the more tender they are, the kind of easier they are to use.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with the skinnier, more tender ones, you can just chop them up into scrambled eggs or for a garnish on anything and saute them lightly. You can pickle them.
Yes,
we've done that in years. It's really cute. You kind of wind them up in the jar, so it looks, the jar is full of these little circles, and then you pour your vinegar solution over them. So the trick with the scapes is those, to get them while they're tender, which also, I believe, Lana's husband Joe was saying, you should pick the scapes early so that they don't drain energy from the bulb itself.
Yes, when I first started growing garlic, I thought, oh, look at these pretty things twirling around the top, and they just go nuts. But what research has shown, and we believe it too, that if you take those, grab onto these scapes early and take them up, they actually could just be one.
Oh, like a straight little thing.
Yeah, you can tell they're coming up. The earlier you snap those little things off and let the garlic stay in the field, then all of the energy goes into the bulb. So it's it has another month to grow before the garlic starts drying down, and it'll start drying down from the bottom up. The leaves will get dry from the bottom up.
And that's when you know it's time to dig them
right,
up.
Yeah, right. That's the time I start pulling a couple of test garlics, and if it's got paper already on it, then yeah, if you let it go too long.
It's called paper, but what it is the outer skin layers start to dry out and become papery. Now, once you pick it all, then you hang it in the barn for how long? You have to cure the garlic.
Well, to make it last a good long time. Cure the garlic. Hang it in a dark, dry place with air. With it, we have a nice barn to put it in, or any place you can give it air movement and out of the sun. It needs to cure those. As soon as you take it out of the ground, the garlic starts drying, which is not a bad thing because that helps it last throughout the winter.
I mean, you could eat it then, too.
Oh, yeah.
But the bulk of the crop you want to hang up to dry
for
about a month, right?
About a month, yeah.
In the middle of the summer.
Right. That's one nice thing about alliums in general. You can pretty much eat them all the time. Think of ramps, which is also in that same family. Early spring things, and you can eat the leaves. You can eat the little bulb underneath. And onions are like that too. Onions and garlic and are pretty much, you can eat them any old time because they all taste pretty darn good. It depends on, do you want a big bulb to last through the winter, or do you want a big onion to slice up on your hamburger? Or you could go out and pick the onions that are growing right now, and they'd look a little, well, they're probably a little bigger than scallions right now, but yeah, and they all taste good.
Well, what we do, the we with Joe and Lana's harvest and hard work, I am the lucky recipient of a good deal of garlic. So it's dried for a month after it's picked in around the 4th of July-ish. And then you have just beautiful, juicy cloves for a good many months. Mm-hmm. Then it starts to get, it'll get a little green sprout in it.
Because the Allium family knows, how the Allium family knows, I do not know, but the garlic knows long about January that spring is coming and it starts waking up from the inside.
So what we do with the garlic when it reaches that point is we break it all into the individual cloves. We don't peel them, but we freeze them.
That seems to work pretty darn well.
Yeah, it gets us with local garlic. I mean, I'm at the end of last year's harvest. We got probably just enough to get us through to when the fresh comes, which would be around early August.
Right.
To be cured and ready to go.
So we'll be sick of eating scapes by then, but that's okay.
Yeah.
The scapes come in quantity, but they're a wonderful taste of the early summer garlic, and enjoy that a lot. Yes, we do.
So my garlic trick, right? My famous garlic trick. This is how I use a lot of garlic. I often think people say, oh, Donna, your food's so good. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, yeah, it's because I use a lot of garlic and anything where garlic can be used. I don't just chop up one little clove. I use a lot of garlic. There is an old saying, garlic is better than 10 mothers. Which indicates the virtue of garlic. It's good for you. It's healthy. It's flavorful. All of those things. So generally, I peel a bunch of cloves and I put it in my food processor with some olive oil, and I just turn it into a paste, which I then keep in a small container in the refrigerator. And I just, because, you know, when you're busy cooking up a dish, sometimes you'll get a little lazy and you won't want to chop up 5 or 6 cloves of garlic, right? It's tedious work. So I already have it pre-chopped and ready to roll. And then you can just put in a big old tablespoon into the stir fry or into the soup or into the anything. So I keep a lot of garlic that way. And I know you can buy garlic already prepared that way, but I would discourage you from doing that simply because the garlic that you crush and put in your own olive oil in your own refrigerator, you know the date that you did that. If you buy one in the refrigerated case in the grocery store, who knows how long it's been in that jar, and garlic does degrade. So I only use the amount that I will, it can sit, if it's fresh garlic, freshly ground, I can pull from the same little container for about a month, and then it starts to go off a little bit.
Right, and then go back to the freezer if you're in the middle of early spring and get some of that garlic out and start over again.
Start over again. And if we're using the, once you freeze the garlic cloves, they change consistency, but not really flavor. So using it ground up in olive oil, now we don't freeze it like that. We freeze the garlic cloves whole, dry, and then you thaw some out, and then you peel them off, and then you pop them in the Cuisinart with the olive oil. That way I have a ready supply of garlic for any time I need it.
And one always needs garlic.
Yes.
I'm with you. When we cook at our house, onions and garlic go in everything. There is a reason we call our farm Onion Creek Farm. I mean, just things grow well there. And I am always amazed at the variety of the onion family. We've talked about chives before. Chives are from the onion family too. And they put up beautiful, beautiful purple flowers. The onion chives do this time of year. And then there's Garlic chives, a flat-leafed little plant. This is wonderfully tasty, but that puts up white flowers.
Yeah, in about August or something.
Yeah.
And those seem to grow wild in everybody's gardens all over town, garlic chives.
Isn't that nice?
It is. It is.
So, yeah. And I just pulled a few things. Well, I brought some things that I could hold up to the microphone so you could see them here. I brought some garlic that I picked just yesterday.
So the fresh garlic, is what we're using before it goes into a full head. These are about, what, an inch and a quarter across. They're good sized already.
Right. It's no longer a long scallion-looking thing. They're starting to bulb up, which means that there is
a hard neck
in the middle. But like I said, tasty.
She's got these whole pulled right from the ground. They're really pretty. They're like pearl colored. They're so shiny. But if you cut them now and slice them across, you would see the beginning demarcations of the cloves, right?
Yes, definitely.
But since the papers or the skin around them has not dried out at all and it's still forming, it will be tender enough to eat. So you could like cut these into little discs and fry them into a stir fry or any sort of thing, and they would be kind of pretty.
Yes,
you could slice these really thin and fry them up into little discs and use them as a garnish on all kinds of savory things. They are, garlic is just charming at any stage that you use it.
We like garlic. And also, I have two different kinds of perennial onions.
Oh, these are beautiful onions.
They're like giant scallions. Reseed themselves and come back from whatever cloves I've left underneath, whatever bulbs I've left underneath the ground. I've talked before about Welsh onions. These are Welsh onions, little red pinkish onions that have a little pink tinge to them at the bottom.
And they're big. They're a couple of feet long.
Yes. Actually, it's a really pretty garden plant because the top has a little powder puff seed head.
It's a big seed head. It's maybe an inch and a half across. Is it edible or is it too chewy at that point?
Well, here, let's try.
All right. Let's see.
It's edible right now. And it's lovely.
Oh, it is good.
It's good. Well, it's like...
I would have thought it would be a little more seedy and chewy. No,
it does get delicious. Seedy and chewy.
Nice and strong. You can definitely chop those up and throw them into a salad.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Or on an omelet. Beautiful.
They do make hard little black allium seeds, and they seed like crazy. So once you have these in your garden... You have them. It's a nice thing. And here's another kind.
Do they move around or they come back in the same place?
They're a plant. They don't move around.
But do the seeds blow off and come up wherever they feel like it? Or they drop around where you've got them?
They drop around where...
Oh, so they're well-behaved.
They are well-behaved. And if you don't want them, just pull them out or turn them under. And I got these... This plant, which I think is called walking onion.
This is the walking onion. And it's almost 3 feet long. It's even bigger than the other one.
Talk about an alien-looking seed head.
Oh, my goodness. It has this really funny flower, and then it shoots a little scape off from that wiggles around. Oh, these would be beautiful in a flower arrangement, too.
They are. See,
and when people... You could eat those, too.
Yeah, top and bottom, you can eat those too. There's all different, like I said, there's all different kinds of aliens.
Now, do you think there's a difference in the flavor of the two?
I don't.
Kind of a sweet onion.
They're a sweet
basically.
Onion. They're good. So here's...
Oh, yummy, yummy.
Three cheers to onions. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. Yes, it is garlic season. Three cheers for all those Allium family members that are out there. Donna found a good cookbook. Donna always finds good
cookbooks. That's what I do for easy reading is cookbooks, you know. But this one I wanted to talk about because this is basically a children's cookbook. But not one of those schmarmy kinds that's just teaching you how to make this one actually, could anybody who wants to up their cooking skills, who really thinks they don't know how to cook, it's called The Dynamite Kids Cooking School. It's a couple of Boston ladies, Dana Bowen and Sarah Kate Gillingham, who evidently they have online stuff and cooking classes and all this sort of thing. But what I like about this book, I got it for two young friends who are 10-year-old twins. This Dynamite Kids Cooking School, subtitled Delicious Recipes That Teach All the Skills You Need. So if you have a youngin in your family that's old enough to, you know, read and want to learn basic cooking skills, this is a wonderful summer project because they go through not particularly child-centric recipes, but really family-friendly food. And if you cook your way through the book, you will learn all the basic cooking skills you need. So they start with eggs, you know, boiled, fried, poached, totally adaptable frittata, blah, blah, blah. The next thing is roasting, how to roast a chicken, how to roast vegetables, blah, blah, blah. Chapter 3 is sauteing and searing, you know, with pan-fried dumplings, lemony broccoli rabe, perfect cast iron steak, smash burgers, you know, things that are very relatable. The fourth one is sauces, and they go through, you know, mayonnaise and aioli, classic guacamole, bechamel, you know. Next one is pasta, then casseroles, then soups and stews, salads, breads and baking, then sweets, of course, drinks and other cooking things to do, which are chicken stock, vegetable stock, cooking dried beans, cooking grains, quick fridge pickles, any easy fruit jam, whipped cream, shaken butter, tortillas, toasted nuts and seeds, garlicky bruschetta, and croutons. So this book, which I think is aimed at like, oh, I would say 8 through 14 maybe, is a good, if you have children that age in your, you know, in your neighborhood or your family, this is a really good book to have and to do a summer project. You know, you could have a once a week, the children could make the dinner. I mean,
good
you could
idea.
You could turn them loose in the kitchen and they could produce on their own eventually the whole dinner. I'm really thrilled with we're gonna have.
I'm impressed with how complete it seems. It's not just let's have a cute breakfast for Mother's Day. No. This is how to make the stuff.
Yeah. So this coming weekend, I'm gonna have Rose and Anahita, my 10-year-old friends, come down, and we are going to have a play pretend restaurant. So the parents will sit at the table, and the girls and I will be in the kitchen. And we're going to make the summer squash and herb risotto. Uh-huh. And we're going to make ice cream. Of course, we're making rhubarb rose geranium ice cream. And then with that, we're going to make madeleines, which are these little French cake-like cookies to go with the ice cream. So I really, really am happy with this book, Dynamite Kids Cooking School by Dana Bowen and Sarah Kate Gillingham. And if you think your skills are rusty or you don't know everything you want to, this is a good place for adults to just jump in also.
Well, thanks for sharing. It looks like a great book, The Dynamite
I'm really
Kids
happy
Cooking
with it.
School. Good, good.
I mean, most kids' cookbooks are a little schmarmy, you know, so this does not talk down to the kids. And the recipes are really clear and, you know, they talk about each new technique as they introduce it. So, Dynamite Kids Cooking School. There you go.
Thanks, Donna. Good. Well, I want to talk about a summer thing. It's June, and on every street, in every small town, or even in some big towns. Garage sales. Garage sales are happening. It is a summer thing. Well, it happens other times, too. But this is the time of year that you see those signs go up. And I was reading a book by an author named Ted Kooser. Ted Kooser actually was born here in Ames in 1939, and he lives in Nebraska now. But he grew up here in Ames. He grew up in the Roosevelt neighborhood, which is kind of right where our studio is. We're close to that right now. And he has a lot of good stories about that, but he talks about small town garage sales, and also he talks about it being a lot like theater. So this is from Ted Kooser, a book called Local Wonders. Have you ever noticed how much a garage sale is like a theater? And how much people having garage sales are like actors placed here and there on the stage? Is it merely a coincidence that Avon bottles are prominently featured in newspaper advertisements? Often you see the term, lots of Avon. When Shakespeare lived and worked at Stratford-on-Avon, it's a literary allusion. The parallels go on and on. Let's take a quick look at a typical Saturday matinee at an off-Broadway garage sale. You enter the cool shade of the theater and study the set. For a curtain, we have, of course, the garage door. At some sales, the audience must wait out front until the door is raised. Most garage sale devotees seem to resent this. At most sales, though, the curtain is already up by the time you arrive. For a backdrop, in the theater, it would be called the cyclorama, there is a shadowy rear wall hung with bent rakes and snarled weed eaters marked not for sale. Or maybe everything in the back there is draped with a pink chenille bedspread. This adds a little suspense. It's anyone's guess is what may be behind the curtain. Remember your stage directions? Downstage is toward the front. Upstage is toward the back. Right and left are to the right and left of the actors. The set includes, along with lots of tables heaped with rummage, an old card table. Downstage, right. It's brown card table, scuffed white on the edges from being slid in and out of a closet for years. And at the table are two folding chairs. There are two actors at this table, a leggy woman in her 30s and a little girl. The woman has a long, thin cigarette dangling from her lips, the ashes about to fall on her lap. The little girl is taking change out of a cigar box and counting it out into little stacks and licking her fingers to taste the sourness. Now and then the woman reaches over and pulls the girl's hand away from her mouth. These actors are aware of their audience, but they scarcely acknowledge that you are there. From the screen door, stage right, enter an old woman. She is wearing an apron and carrying a soft, leaky puppy at arm's length. She turns to the audience and says, "Can anyone use a good dog?" The little girl, upset, "Grandma, Grandma, that's Misty's puppy," and so on. The drama unfolds. There are a number of standard comedies, many of them featuring a debate between family members over personal history of some props, as in, "It's real old, Aunt Violet gave it to the folks for a wedding present." No, Ginger, you're dead wrong about that. As you can see, most of the playwrights use local dialect and idioms. Where I live, one common usage is different, D-I-F-F, apostrophe E-N-T, as when enumerating the virtues of an amateur painting by one of the absent family members. "That sure is different." Or, "That painting of Jill's, that's real different, that's for sure." If you like tragedy, you can find a melancholy edge to many of these little side street dramas. Beautiful handiwork of some lost grandmothers going for a very small sum. There's a little sadness at the edge of every sail, the sorrow of some gift once cherished, now stuffed into a cardboard box. And there's a little sex, of course. There's something vaguely arousing about being in a space stacked high with intimate personal disclosures, each carrying the intoxicating fragrance of strangeness. By looking around, you can learn almost more than you want to know about the young woman at the card table. We are such stuff that dreams are made of. And as the play comes to an end, people go home, things are put away, and in the theater, the thing is usually over. But at a garage sale, you can take it with you. At the end of the play, when the weary actors get ready to draw down the wooden curtain, they may even give you the props. You take a dime for that? That was a little bit by author Ted Kooser from a book called Local Wonders, Season in the Bohemian Alps. The Bohemian Alps are a local name for a place near Garland, Nebraska, where he lives now. There aren't any Alps in Nebraska, of course, but a whole lot of Bohemian immigrants lived there and moved there, and the Alps really are probably the only bit of elevation change for many miles there, so they refer to themselves as living in the Bohemian Alps. A good book, Ted Kooser, Local Wonders. Ted Kooser's father, for many years, worked in a department store on Main Street here in Ames, the Tilden Department Store. It's not there anymore, but the building sure is. So, garage sales. I don't go to a lot of garage sales, but every now and then, you kind of pull over to next to the side of the curb, and I like looking. I don't buy too much, but there's always something. There's always something.
It's a sport for some people, you know.
It is a sport. It's good. Also, you go to auctions, which are a bit more ordered than a garage sale, but
somewhat.
You can find a lot of good things there too.
Yeah, I often go out to the auction, Nicola Wilson auction, and you know, I think half my house is furnished with spectacular things I found there that I just couldn't go home without. You know?
See, it's always good to find something like that.
Well, I do look for what I call culinary antiques, like a little, I got an awful lot of cherry pitters. And other things that I go, oh my goodness, I have to take this home because I'll never see another one of these things again, you know. Some very interesting things that people have used over the years before we had, you know, food processors and big blenders and all the electrical stuff, you know. Some cute things. Like, have you ever seen those corn huskers gloves? Do you know what those are?
Yes. I remember my mom and dad showing me. Remember how we used to do this? Well, I never saw them do it, but he explained how that was.
It's like this sort of, you strap it onto your hand and it has picks on it or something. It looks like something out of an ancient torture museum or something. It's really weird. The other things I found are hog scrapers.
Now, see?
It's a kind of a flat, not quite, slightly concave disc about 2.5 inches across with a handle on it. It's used when you have the hog hanging up after it's been butchered. You use it to scrape the hair off.
Is it metal?
Yes.
It's metal. Oh.
With a wooden handle, usually.
Well, next time, I know where to find one.
Green bean cutters. That's another thing you'll see once in a while.
Yeah.
Or cabbage slicers.
I see.
For making sauerkraut. I also have in my kitchen it's a corn mill, basically. It's got the milling thing. It's also got an attachment that is the, what is it called? Where it takes you put the dried corn cob in and it's
sheller.
The sheller separates the cob from the corn kernels, and then the corn kernels fall down into a little box. Then you put them through the mill and grind them at whatever, I mean, we've used it a few times. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Joe will come and grind up the chicken feed in and things like that.
Good. Good. Well, always things to find at sales and garage sales. This is Kay Joy. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoyfm.org. You can find out more about our show on that website and lots of other good shows. This is community radio. It is a good thing. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, talking about good summer things. And, well, not, I can think of nothing better than chocolate to kind of fill in all the gaps. You can eat that any old time. On past shows, we've talked about, and actually Donna turned me on to brown butter. And now I ran across the recipe that makes brownies out of cocoa, walnuts, and brown
cocoa
butter.
Cocoa powder.
Mm-hmm. Cocoa powder. And what is better? I mean, you've got your chocolate, and you've got your brown butter. Pretty darn good.
Well, so brown butter, your favorite brownie recipe, whatever it is, whatever butter it calls for, if you put the butter in a little saucepan and you melt it and let it keep cooking after it melts until the milk particles that are part of the butter kind of fall to the bottom and they start to brown. They turn a little like rusty colored almost.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And it kind of happens all at once. You got to watch it.
Yeah, and you got to like scrape with the silicone spatula and stuff like that. But if you brown that butter, then it adds another layer of flavor to your brownie recipe. And Lana made, I love this recipe. It comes from a book, Sinfully Easy Delicious Desserts, Quicker, Smarter Recipes by Alice Medrich. Now, Alice Medrich is the queen of chocolate baking. And this is really, I have to say, this is probably my favorite all-time dessert recipe cookbook. She has all kinds of, and she is a good recipe writer. She explains things really well, and she doesn't do a lot of silly nonsense. So her cocoa brownies with walnuts and brown butter, which Lana made, and we're going to get to eat.
And this actually turned out like the picture. I am so thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
They are
intense. Oh, they're gorgeous.
And they're one of these moist. You don't need much. So you can eat two as opposed
to
one.
And they're dark chocolate brownies.
Dark. And they're made with cocoa powder. So I thought, well, cocoa powder, what the heck with this? But it's good. Ingredients. Mm,
so good.
10
they
tablespoons.
They have walnuts in them too.
Walnuts. 10 tablespoons of unsalted butter cut into 1-inch chunks, 1 1/4 cups sugar, 1 3/4 cups unsweetened cocoa powder. She says preferably natural. A little side note here from Alice Medrich. She says the taste of brown butter goes especially well with natural rather than Dutch processed cocoa. So I don't even know what kind of cocoa I use because I used it. I got from the herb, spice and herb section at the food co-op, and it was, you know, from a large jar.
It's the natural one.
It's the natural
Dutch one. Dutch processed, I could be wrong about this, but I think Hershey's, like that you buy at the regular. That's probably Dutch process.
Ah. I don't know what the difference
is. She did say in her side note, if you ever get really ambitious, you make two versions, one with each kind, and that you can taste the difference in the chocolates that you use.
The chocolate, okay. Mm,
it's so good.
Round tablespoon, teaspoon of salt. Well, anyway, you melt the butter. You add, melt the butter, and be careful. You brown the butter until it's got those little...
Right. Don't take your eyes off of it.
Don't take your eye. And when it's ready, you add the sugar and the cocoa powder, salt, and 2 tablespoons of water and a teaspoon of vanilla extract into the hot, hot butter and stir it until it's all combined. And let that cool off a little bit. You add 2 cold large eggs, and mix those in 1 at a time. And then 1/3 cup plus 1 tablespoon unbleached all-purpose flour. And this is, and I've made these a few times, and I've always followed this. It seems a little bit excessive, but you put the flour in and stir it until you can't see the flour anymore. And then she says, beat vigorously for 50 to 60 extra strokes. And this is kind of tough dough here, so you have to kind of work at it. It's worth it. It's worth it to make it.
Oh, you know what? I think I wrote in my cookbook
that
I use my electric mixer.
Oh, okay. You could.
I made a note to myself because that part is much easier with an electric mixer.
Also, it's worth it. I mean, it looks like it's mixed, but...
it gets the egg incorporated through the whole thing.
It fluffs it up and makes everything shiny and lovely. And you stir in the nuts and put it in a lined pan. She suggested using tin foil. I use parchment paper, but it's good. It's good. And they're
so rich that you can actually cut them into fairly small pieces, and they're
they're kind of like fudge sized pieces. Yeah, I could have cut them into bigger pieces, and then we would have probably fallen over after eating.
Yeah, the inch by inch, because they're about an inch high too.
Yeah,
so, they're really lovely. You know what, Lana? Do you remember the other thing you made with brown butter that we loved?
Oh, what was it?
Rice Krispie treats.
Now, talk about being worth the trouble. I think that is. Rice Krispie.
Just your standard on the back of the Rice Krispie box, the recipe. If you brown the butter for that before you put it into the, the marshmallow and Rice Krispie mix, it makes this really subtle, delightful difference.
Ah, good. Oh, and we were talking earlier about kitchen gadgets that you find at garage sales and old things. My favorite thing when it comes to making cookies, there's an old spoon that my mother just used to death. Not a long wooden spoon, a rather short wooden spoon that you can really get a good handle on. It's got a great edge for smoothing and for creaming butter and eggs against the side of a bowl. And that old spoon, now I've got other wooden spoons, but that old spoon has made a lot of cookies.
Oh, that's your cookie spoon.
It is a cookie spoon. See, everybody has their favorite things.
Well, that won't be at your garage sale, I bet.
No, not mine. I could keep that one.
Yep.
The thing is, I've got a whole lot of other kitchen things that I never use. It seems like a good idea, but... No, it's funny how you...
Yeah, after a while, I very rarely buy cooking gadgets.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty happy with the techniques that I have.
Oh, good, good. Well, we sort of had a theme of things that start with G. We started talking about garlic today, and we started talking about... Well, we started about garlic, we talked about garage sales and really good brownies. I had to put good in front of my brownies. They're good brownies, which are
good, gooey brownies.
And also, we have a great recipe book for kids that Donna talked about. It was really good. Also, we've got some upcoming things happening here. The Practical Farmers of Iowa finally got my field day in the mail.
The field day guide, and it is a big one this year.
All kinds of things.
So we will be having some future programs with some of the farmers promoting their field days. Especially, we'll pick the ones that we think the eaters will enjoy.
I don't know. I enjoy it all. The very first one is Friday, June. Well, actually, they've had some already, but in this field guide, the first one is Friday, June 7th, Dairy Grazing Silvopasture and Compost. That's in Paulina, Iowa. And there's one on conservation to create habitat, conservation plantings to create habitat. And on June 14th, Grazing Round the Farm, hosts Ethan and Becca Book from Crooked Gap Farm in Knoxville, Iowa. We'll talk about transitioning from row crop to permanent pasture, a pretty radical thing to do around here, but that's what we're doing. I think it's a good idea. Anyway, that field guide is available now for a whole summer's worth of stuff. You can find out more at practicalfarmers.org, farmers plural, practicalfarmers.org. Good, good. Also, Donna, I got news from our good friend Carly Zurich, who is a PFI person that helps us out with our podcast. It's nice to have help. So she let us know that we are up to number 100. So we have done 100 podcasts of this silly show, and there it is.
If you want to listen to the radio show in a podcast format, wherever you listen to podcasts, you just type in Donna Lana Kitchen. And Donna Lana is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A Kitchen. And there we will be. So we have now, I guess, 100 podcasts and 10 years worth of radio archives.
Oh, my goodness, so. Donna. Oh, my goodness. There you go. Well, also want to remind you that this is summer, so find yourself your local farmers market and start enjoying some good food. Here is another upcoming thing. KHOI Radio presents The Weary Ramblers. It is a fundraiser for KHOI musicians. Chad Elliott and Catherine Fox will be performing at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium Tuesday, June 18th. At 7 p.m. Enjoy some good music. Chad Elliott is a good musician to hear, good person right here in Iowa. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon on Tuesdays, repeated Tuesdays, 7 p.m., and also, as Donna said, on a podcast. And you can find us also at khoyfm.org. Stream, download, and do all that sort of thing there. Find out more about this radio station. Support this radio station. We had music by the Barn Owl Band. My name's Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.